G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out. Scott Gullen is back again as part of the team. He's basically furniture. It's nice looking across the desk and seeing him these days. I forget what the other bloke looks like. It's great to have Scotty with us. Morning, Scotland.
Good morning, Daniel.
The other bloke.
The other bloke, yeah.
That's what we refer to him as now.
2 days this week, are we potentially?
Well, chances are it's a Thursday-Friday affair for our man.
But okay, that's good.
I'm not holding out any hope. In fact, I'm not sure he's actually still with us.
Okay. Cricket does start tonight. That's a curveball.
That's going to throw him.
Because that means he'll sleep for 2 hours before he comes in.
That's not ideal.
No.
Not ideal for a man who's been down. Now,
we have to talk. We'll introduce our co-host.
Well, which, of course, is Australia's greatest ever netballer and an excellent part of our team here on the Breakfast Club. And a Wednesday specialist she is. Sharon McMahon, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
What's the green room etiquette?
What do you mean?
Like what we discuss in the green room before we come in. I just need to clear
up. You appreciate
up
meeting.
Before I move
I think
on.
There's just an element of common sense about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So, Sherelle and
where are we going with this? Because there were some interesting topics in the green room this morning.
Sherelle and I will be very excited at 8 o'clock tonight.
I
won't because it's on. Is it on Jim? No. Is it on the real stuff?
I don't know where it's on. Check your local guides. Well,
surely we'll be able to find it, though, wherever it is.
Potentially, I won't be watching it, but Sherelle will be going the
Lord's. I certainly will be watching.
And given your love of cricket, Daniel Sun, I'd expect you'd be doing the same.
You'll be rubbing your hands together.
You know, this is rubbing salt into the wound. Speaking of rubbing.
I was going to say, that was not the right use of...
It's on Gem, by the way. We've just been told out
that
the back.
That was an unfortunate turn of phrase for me, right?
I didn't use that term.
No, Sherelle. Well, now you're rubbing salt into the wounds, Sherelle, is what you're doing. Because
placing salt on a wound.
Shaking salt onto the...
I don't shake things. Why would you do that? Yeah, sicko.
No.
It's getting worse. Why?
I need to rewind this. So I had a good day yesterday.
What are you up to, Daniel, at 8 o'clock?
Look,
you'll be just sitting down.
It's one of those
flicking
nights.
Flicking on Gem, getting ready to...
Well, as you know, I do love cricket. And
yes,
I will
I
be
do,
certainly
maybe.
Very keen to follow the second test from Lord's. But tonight of all nights, the Lord's test... I have with my son the Wonder of Life meeting.
Is that what it's called?
The Wonder of Life.
No.
Wonder of Life.
For those playing at home, it's sex ed.
Wonder of Life.
It's the Wonder of Life night tonight.
Oh,
and
that's
I've got
exciting.
To go with my son.
How old is the great man?
Fathers and mothers with their
is
sons.
Is he what? Seven?
Grade six.
Grade six.
Grade six. And I've got to go and sit through the videos.
No.
What type of videos do they offer?
Well, it's a very. Because this is the thing. It's a two-pronged attack.
Oh.
It's like Cummins from one end and Pat's from the other. They're just barraging him with short-pitch deliveries. Last Thursday was the preview. Was the parents' preview, just to give you a bit of a heads-up about what's coming at you.
Without the child.
Without
no
the child.
Children.
So I had to sit through that, which was a very lonely affair. Very lonely affair. So I've gone through that because it's about preparing your child, my son.
The way of life.
So how,
the wonder of life.
How
the wonder.
The
wonder.
Preparation chat's been going? Nah. Pretty open? Pretty
nah, he's not open to
it?
Any conversation.
He's not engaging.
He's not open to any conversation, my little man. He's got no interest in what's going on.
Oh, dear.
It's going to be one of those nights, I can see it already, where he's just going to keep looking at me as if to say, is this fair thing going on, Dad?
I don't blame the young man.
I've got no doubt.
Where we are in
just, he would keep looking at the screen or looking at whoever's presenting and look at me going, we're not really staying for this, are we?
And you'll be looking at your phone at the cricket going, I can't believe it. They're two for already.
Well, hopefully it's England too.
Oh, that's right.
If we're bowling. But yeah, I get to miss out the first session at Lord's because I have the Wonder of Life.
Well,
chat.
Do you know what? Some things are more important than cricket.
Oh, Sherelle.
That's not true. Nothing's more important.
Maybe a Colombo second day.
Well, this,
but not the first day of the Lord's test. Not the first session of Lord's in an Ashes campaign.
They didn't think through that scheduling,
no.
Did they?
Very disappointing.
Sherelle, do you recall such evenings or chats in your childhood?
No, I do.
Say hello to your parents who listen to
it. John and Ollie.
John and Ollie, all the
not,
best.
John and Ollie, welcome, by the way. I've
not
listening.
Many convos.
They've just fallen off the
in Strathallan Road from Orm about that. No, not many.
I can't
I
see
think
John
we
being
did...
a big. What do I call it?
The wonder of life, man. I can't see him being a big wonder of life, man.
Can you see him saying, Darl, sit down. Come on, your mum wants me to talk to you.
Your mum's going to have to say this.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure we did have some chats, obviously, as you do at primary school, but I don't think we involved the parents. That's a change from when we were growing up.
Oh, I don't remember any
of
this stuff.
No, I don't really remember.
I don't remember.
I'm still trying to work out what's happening and how you do it all, and I'm still trying to work it out.
They figure it out. The youngsters figure it out. That's my theory.
That's your approach.
They figure it out.
That's how it's done in the Gallen household. Yeah. Just leave yourself to your own devices.
I tried to go there once, and he was told quickly, like your son, no. We're all good, Dad. Oh, okay, you're fine. You're across it. Let's move on.
So tick that box.
Yeah.
Anyway, I might even come in tomorrow just to hear how it went. Now,
it's going to be exciting. I got no doubt there's going to be. Are we still staying for this? That'll come out at some stage tonight. Surely, when this is not.
How long is it? It'd be brief, wouldn't it?
It's a range of sort of age group stuff. It's going to be an hour and a half. It's going to be the first session of play.
An hour and a half.
It's going to be disastrous.
Did you try the maybe a mum should do this type
of... Well, it's a very important father-son activity.
Yeah, I know that's a cliche, but the mum can go.
It's a cliche.
That's what you should say.
It's a cliche. I think it's more about respectful relationships these days and all that sort of stuff. So the video I was sort of leaning to on Thursday night for the preview. It was Pat Cummins was coming from one end.
You had a preview. That's astonishing.
Yeah, so...
What school do you send these children to?
A very considered and thoughtful... And respectful school.
Yeah, of course. That's what I meant.
Now, you are the king of Segway, so I'm just interested to see how you...
No, I don't know where to go from this.
Normally, I'm here to help you, but I can't even offer.
Speaking of big men, Aaron Sandilands, of course, is...
That's one of your better ones, yes. The Fremantle... Docker Ruffin.
Cheryl's going to have a conniption over here.
Yeah, no, we've lost him for about 15 minutes.
The big man down.
Sandy. Kind of shock for the punters.
When was the last time he played, Sandy?
No, he's come back the last few weeks. I know. He's actually been quite good.
271 games it'll be for Big Sandy.
Did he play that many?
Yeah, for a bloke his size.
He's been injured for like 3 years too. 271.
That's what happens when, as you say, for a man of his size, it's hard to keep getting around the ground like he
does. Is it true that he got offered that Star Wars gig? Like, that's a true story, isn't it?
What?
He got offered, some sort of, and knocked it back to keep playing?
That can't be right.
I'm going to Google it. I keep hearing it. I think it was true.
Why wasn't it in the Whisper?
No, it's like a well-known story that we've known for years.
I haven't come across that story, I must admit.
Or maybe I'm making
that he had a chance to be in Star Wars, but decided to keep playing footy instead.
Yeah.
Right.
Stay with me.
I was not aware of that. Well,
the wonder of life while I took this out.
For a bloke that size to be travelling across the country 2,000 times. Someone did the numbers last night. It was about 2,000 times he travelled across.
Aaron Sandilands denied a chance to appear on Star Wars because Fremantle thought he was too shy.
What?
Yeah, I'll find out.
Expand
more
on that, would you? Can you give us more information on that?
That
can't be
Keep
right.
Keep going.
While we're talking about opportunities for silver screen stuff, he would have been the Wookiee, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of Wookiee list, Tom Wilkinson from the Kangaroos. Did you see Tom Wilkinson?
Oh, yeah.
Now, Tom Wilkinson is a Wookiee. Not the Chewbacca style from Star Wars and Aaron Sandilands, but he has quit the AFL to be a part of next season of The Amazing Race Australia with Paul Roos's son Tyler. So the Wookiee from North Melbourne said, probably not going to get another spot anyway, so I'm out. I'm going to go and do The Amazing Race with Tyler, so I'm Dunsky. Reality television. Cool. It's taking over the world. Simon Black's on Survivor at the moment. Sean Hampson. Abby Holmes.
Apparently he'd been injured and then had got going and hadn't got a kick in the VFL, so wants to go on reality TV instead.
Oh, well.
So is he guaranteed a spot in it?
Well, he must be.
If they're announcing something like that, he's obviously got his spot there.
Yeah, well, there you go. He will fly to a secret location on Thursday to start filming for the reality TV show.
This is the worldwide one. There's not an Australian
version. No, Australia. Amazing Race Australia.
Oh, that's not that exciting.
Well, it is if you win.
Oh, yeah.
Catch. Sure, Probably making more
That's
out of
the... That's a new one, is it?
The Amazing Race.
The Amazing Race that has been before, but I haven't seen that for a while, the Amazing Race Australia.
Well, there was $250,000 up for grabs, they tell me, for the Amazing Race Australia. And your man, the Wookiee, Tom Wilkinson, will be travelling with Tyler Ruse. Ruse's boy for that. It makes a bit of sense. If you're not going to get a game and you're not going to get another contract.
Yeah, but this is your first year, isn't it? You made the call pretty early.
I was going to say, is it a quick call?
Well, I reckon he's worked it out that life's not
that Reese isn't a big embracer of his work.
That the AFL world might not be, you might not be long for the AFL world. So you make the call based on that, don't you?
Yeah. No.
And then, as we know, and you know this with your best mate, Bianca Chatfield, co-host of the award-winning Inner Circle podcast.
Yes.
It's not just what happens on the show. It's all the trimmings that come with it. She's getting gigs left, right and centre, Big B.
She is. She's doing very well. I mean, perhaps that did have something to do with the fact she was on the block, but...
Of course it was. The Channel 9 are pumping her up willy-nilly.
She everywhere now.
She jumped up out of my cornflakes yesterday morning. She's everywhere. Everywhere, Big B.
She's doing very well at the moment.
This reality television craze, that once you get on, it lingers. You get sort of residual, like...
For some it does, for those that have some talent.
Well, there's a Married at First Sight, a few of them have lingered. A few are going to jail.
People doing things and getting coverage?
Well, are they?
They do get coverage.
Apparently, I don't know much about who's doing what, but...
Yeah, the blonde-haired girl's trying to be Barbie or something I read on the weekend. Whatever her name is, the crazy one.
No, I don't know who.
I think Bee's perhaps getting some coverage for different reasons.
Well, no, she's got a fair bit. She's got a backstory. We'll have a backstory in reality television. You've got to have a backstory so we can come with you on the journey.
Yes.
We're going to embrace you.
Yes.
So Bee's certainly got that. She's doing great things.
Yeah.
But this is the opportunity for reality.
Absolutely.
And he is a former football star. Yeah. That's what they'll sell him as.
Oh, yeah.
Former football star, Tyler Wilkinson. The Wookiee,
yes,
from North Melbourne.
Well, so. I don't think Carla Dworkin, who was Bianca Chatfield's teammate on the block, ever played so many games for Australia as when she was on the block. You know, she was like, Australian netballer.
Right.
Unfortunately for Dworkin, she didn't quite make it to that. She was a very good netballer.
Well, she was a netballer in Australia.
Yes.
So that she's an
Australian
netballer.
Netballer. Yes.
It's all in the eye of the beholder,
Cheryl. Bianca's got her in the shade. I haven't heard much about her.
Got her in the shade.
Well, we don't.
She actually works for Cricket Australia. She works. Oh. Yeah. Does some work with logistics and planning and organising. So.
Sounds too hard. Sounds way too hard.
She's in Positano at the moment, so life's not too hard.
See, that's what happens when you go on the block. Maybe you and I could do the block, Scotty.
Mate, I'm the best organiser. I can ring people and say, come and fix my house better than anyone else. So I'm very confident I can do that.
Well, I'd probably even bugger that up. And I certainly wouldn't
And pretend to knock down a wall and look as if I haven't slept. I can do all that. Swear on camera.
Yeah, do all that.
Tannies.
Be great for the storyline. The backstory would be good too.
Yeah, the backstory.
The boy from Bowen Heads.
Yeah, who's never nailed a nail into a wall, but here he is building this amazing apartment. It sells for $10 million.
We're really lucky in the fact that we've got two bowlers in particular on the sidelines that are world class, and we want to make sure that James is absolutely cherry ripe every time he plays. He's available for selection, but we've decided to rest him for his game and make sure that his long-term future is in really good shape.
Nice to have a bit more cricket on our TVs tonight. Tim Payne, the captain of Australia, there talking about James Pattinson, which has got us all talking because we thought
what
Scotty,
is going? This is ridiculous.
That the break between Edgbaston and Lords would be fine now, for Jimmy just to get himself right for that second test back to back.
Before we welcome Colo in,
yes,
James Pattinson's been playing county cricket. They play that every second day, and it's been good for him building up his resistance, and he's bowled really well.
Mm.
8 days is a long time between cricket matches.
No, it's too long.
Okay.
It's the only possible explanation. Let's find out what Colo knows. He's on the ground there getting ready for a big test at Lords. Colo, good morning.
Good morning, Harp. Yeah, it's not so much about the 8 days that have elapsed since the Birmingham test match. It's about the 3 days before the third test at Leeds. That's what underpinned this decision. And I was talking to James a couple of days ago about this, and he said to me that he'd be happy to play one of the two. So I don't think he'll be too disheartened about this. I mean, I think that he probably, like we all did, expected him to play this week, but he would have missed the third test had he played the second. So I mean, to an extent, this rotation policy, they're not calling it that, but this causes-for-causes, conditions-based policy meant that there was a high probability of some change, and they pulled the trigger on Pattinson this time around, but that doesn't mean that it won't be another bowler next time. So I guess what we're seeing here is the lack of a pecking order. When Australia were in England 4 years ago, it was very clear who was the top three bowlers and who were the reserve bowlers. Now we have a group of five and arguably six with Michael Misa, who's bowling the house down at training, who are all like an egalitarian group. Any of them can play based on the conditions they're presented with. So it is quite an interesting situation, one we're not conditioned to. But even though, I agree, Paddo, it looks like on paper an unusual decision to leave him out given how well he bowled last week. This is purely so he can definitely play the third test match.
But why wouldn't you say, Paddo, you're not playing the third? You're playing one and two, then miss three. What's their reasoning behind...
Well, that's it, isn't it? It was a decision one way or the other, and the way they looked at it was that giving him the extra week meant he'd be more likely to be forceful in the third test. So, I mean, just to give you a bit of an understanding with Pattinson, and I know he's been on your show regularly, but the last test he played before this long layoff in 2016, he played with a broken foot, a stress fracture in the back, and a torn abdomen muscle. So he had three serious injuries, and he was playing anyway. So historically, he's been the kind of guy who they've rushed, and it's been to his detriment. The 2014 Test match at Cape Town's another one where they brought him back straight in on very little first-class cricket. He broke down straight away. So I think that they're very mindful of giving him the best opportunity. Look, whether there is an element of wanting to shake it up as far as not letting England settle as well tactically, that hasn't really been gone into by Tim Payne. He's mostly featured on the idea that he wants to make sure that Pattinson, Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins and co are all able to get to the finish line with all of them still fit. So, look, I share the view that I would have thought that Lords is a fantastic place for Pattinson to bowl, given that he has played there quite a bit. He's played there for Nottinghamshire. Of course, he played the Test match there in 2013. And I would have thought that given the conditions we've seen at Lords this year as well, which have been very helpful for fast bowlers, that it would have suited him really nicely. But at the same time, it'll also suit Josh Hazelwood, who's the most likely man to come in tomorrow for the second Test match, and then Pattinson will get his opportunity the next week at Leeds.
We talk about previous regimes and their pecking orders, perhaps from a bowling perspective, Colo, but how does Mitchell Stark feel about all this, that his spot in the pecking order, it seems, has gone all the way down? If Hazelwood does play, he's missed out the first two Tests, and he was our number one strike bowler for so long.
Yeah, well, it's a funny old career arc, isn't it? In the first 15 Test matches that Stark played, he was dropped, omitted, rested 11 times. So he never played three Tests in a row until his 16th Test match. And since then, he's never been dropped. He's never been rested. Sure, he's missed Test matches through injury, but as you say, he's always been the first pick when fit and available to play. So it is quite a big philosophical shift to be leaving Stark out of the side. We spoke to him a couple of days ago after the Worcestershire County game, the tour game, and he's in pretty good spirits. He seemingly has signed up to this idea that as a group of five or six fast bowlers, that they're all going to get an opportunity. He's pretty relaxed, or at least publicly, he's pretty relaxed about it, and he knows that he'll get his chance to influence the Ashes series. So, look, whether they're putting on a brave face or otherwise, they're certainly publicly all seemingly signed up to the Justin Langer philosophy that he wants to have these fast bowlers rotating throughout the course of the five Test matches. And the other thing to remember, of course, is there's never been a five Test match series played in such a short space of time. Because of the World Cup this year, the scheduling for this Ashes series isn't ideal, which, again, I think is a large part of the thinking in the planning here.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about that because it is obviously an Ashes campaign is a massive one. We don't look at it with just one test. Is this the right approach? Is it the right approach to have this lack of pecking order, or do you think as it goes on, the uncertainty that brings might just be a bit destabilising?
I'm quite interested in it, sort of almost like from an academic perspective, like how it will change cricket. Like going forward, we know with baseball, with pitchers, that they rotate through as starters, and there's never really too much leveraged on who's one, who's two, who's three in the pecking order. They just have a rotation, and I'm not saying that cricket will become that. It never will become like that exactly, but it is an interesting exercise because you go back 4 years, and I think a lot of this is to do with what happened 4 years ago. There were two pitches at Edgbaston and Nottingham, which Peter Siddle had to play on. They were built for Peter Siddle to play on. But because Peter Siddle was number four in the pecking order, he didn't get an opportunity to play in either of those two test matches. He only played the fifth test match when Josh Hazlewood eventually got injured at Nottingham. So I think they've seen the example of 2015 with the pecking order, it not working. They've been too rigidly held to it then, and they've realised that in England you have to be a bit more nimble, and that's why we're seeing the situation we've got at the moment. So, look, the one caveat I put on that is that even though this Lord's pitch appears harder and dustier, if you like, and drier than the one we saw a couple of weeks ago when England played Ireland, every game I've been to at Lord's this year, and I think I've been to every one of them in terms of first-class cricket, there's been tons in it for the seam bowlers. And we saw last week with Pattinson that he generates so much movement with that Duke's ball. I do wonder whether the comparative advantage for him would have been at Lord's. But as Tim Payne said today, they want to give him the best chance of playing a few test matches. And I guess they've made a call based more on that than the conditions tomorrow.
And it's a very big welcome back to the Sanctum Chair this morning to our favourite man from the Collingwood Football Club, Taylor Adams. Tay, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you back.
It's good to be back.
You ditched us a couple of weeks ago. You were busy. You had stuff on. You couldn't make it, which we were disappointed about. But it's been a month.
It's been a month, yeah. A long month.
A long month.
What's happened?
Well, we were worried because you got injured in that time and there was fears. Oh, no, he's done it again. They're saying it's a hammy, but we don't believe him because we don't believe him. But thankfully it was.
It was. It was a little niggly. It was really strange, actually. So I played that one game back after missing 11-odd games, and I copped a big hit against the Giants in my right hip, and my whole right side of my body sort of seized up a little bit, and I was getting a little bit of hamstring referral pain. So it wasn't like... It was really strange. I had most of my strength, and I was able to run at about 80%. Mm. But as soon as I went faster than that, I started getting these zaps down my leg, and...
it's not ideal.
Yeah, and that was seriously 5 hours before the game. So I woke up on Friday morning expecting to play and did a fitness test at about 1 o'clock and, yeah, it was ruled out then.
That's not the first time that's happened this year, is it, that you kind of were very confident about playing and then very close to the game you've had to withdraw for different reasons? That must be tough. Is that tough to
have
that happen so late?
It is. It's really difficult. It was sort of a blessing in disguise to some degree because I was really, really sore, my back and my hip. So the right decision was to not play, and that's obviously the more difficult decision to make. But by the time it got to 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was exhausted. I hadn't slept properly. I'd been up to see the physios at 7:30 in the morning because I was really worried about it. And then went home, thought I was okay, then went back into the club to do a fitness test. So I hadn't prepared for the game as well as I usually would have. So to be ruled out at that point, I was it was bittersweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like it was the right move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be annoying that because you're ready to roll and all of a sudden this thing comes along and gives you the Jimmy Brits. That's no good. But it would be more annoying if you're out of contract and no money left. You have signed a 5-year extension. Since we saw you, you've signed a 5-year deal. This must
be
very pleasing.
5 years, yeah. So I'm locked into the club until I'm 31 or 32.
You must like the place.
I do. I really enjoy the place. It was a pretty easy decision for me. Once I knew I was out of contract end of this year, we started having the conversation with the footy club throughout the year last year and sort of tapered off towards the end of the year, obviously, with finals and, you know, the stuff happening throughout September and October. It was nice to have... We sort of agreed to it before Christmas and had to just tweak a few things leading up to throughout this year. And, yeah, I'm wrapped. It's obviously the place I want to be. I love the joint, love my teammates, love my coaching staff and... Yeah, couldn't see myself anywhere.
$8 million, Scotty. $8 million.
What's the phone call like when your manager rings you and go, I've got five?
Yeah.
Because five's a lot.
Five's a lot.
Yeah.
Because I can imagine you go, I want to stay there, give me the longest possible. And you're probably, you're probably thinking three's a good effort and we'll see how we go.
Yeah. Well, there was negotiation. No, we sort of thought, my view was I wanted to lock myself in long term.
Yeah.
Because there's no way I'm going anywhere else. So... it wasn't like I was asking for extraordinary amounts of money, and I was happy to be paid fairly so that we could create the best list that we possibly can have. And
so you take a little bit of a cut, but you get the 5 years.
I think on an open market, most players would go out there, and you know there might be teams lower down the ladder that would pay more for players.
They have to,
yeah. And that was something that like didn't even cross my mind, to be honest. I'd never thought about that because I wouldn't have left. So I didn't tell the club that until
they didn't know that.
Leverage.
How involved are you in that process? Obviously, you've got a manager who takes care of the nitty gritty. Is it? Do you get updated on how things are going, or is it? Do you like to leave it alone?
Well, I sort of pushed it to the side throughout when we were playing, just because it didn't really matter to me at that point in time. But yeah, our list manager, Ned Guy, I've known him for a few years now, and you know, he's only been at the club for, I think, 2 years, but I've known him for a lot longer than that. We had an open dialogue between just he and I, but most of it goes through your manager. There's a lot of, your manager has much more of an understanding of what you're worth and what looks good in a contract, and yeah, I put all my faith in him to get me the fairest deal possible.
So now you can plan buying the boat and the holiday house and you can just start spending.
Invest.
Property, or are you a shares man?
Property at this stage.
How many you got?
I've got two at the moment. One I've just renovated, so it's I'm broke.
Well, five years.
I think that'll help
you get out.
Is that like renovating to keep it or renovating?
Yeah,
we're
living in it now.
Oh, right.
So it was cool. Yeah, it was a bit of an experience.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. But yeah, it took probably 11 months.
Now, yeah, it's full on.
Really. Scotty and I were talking before about perhaps going on the block and
yes.
and being really capable at ringing people to come and fix stuff and not actually doing anything ourselves. What's your role in the renovation? Are you the ringer or the fixer?
Yeah, I'm not very handy.
So, you're on the phone.
Yeah, I'm on the phone most of the time.
Right. Well, you're on the field most of the time when you're out there for the Pies doing good things again. Just looking at the ladder and watching the teams in the last couple of weeks, I've been thinking about you and the Magpies. Chances are, now there are obviously permutations that could take place. Top four might be out of the question. Might be off the table if things keep rolling the way they're rolling at the moment. Does that give you the Jimmy Brits? Are you a bit annoyed about that?
That's news to me.
Well, you say you're a game behind Richmond, and they've got West Coast this week, which would be big.
Yep.
And you've got Adelaide, which will also be quite significant on Saturday.
Yep.
And the other teams are two games in front of you. So you're not going to catch them. Richmond's your only chance to catch for a top four spot.
Yep.
Yeah, they need to lose one.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think not really. Obviously, we want to finish top four, but, you know, we put ourselves in a position where we're a game behind top four position and we've got two games left, so all we can do is go out there and win this weekend and then back it up the next week and try to get the next 8 points. I think the pleasing thing for us is the last 2 weeks we've sort of started to play the way we wanted to play and played throughout the first half of the season. And, yeah, I think against any team, we're really competitive when we do that.
What's returned? Is it style or pressure? What sort of has come back in the last couple of weeks that you feel good about?
Combination of things. Our contest and pressure on the ball is back to where it was on the weekend. I think our pressure number was almost a record for us for this year.
This is by the numbers. Can you explain that to us, please?
It's a very high number.
So pressure number, to those who don't understand it, how do they measure it?
So we basically get a number at quarter time, half time, three quarter time, and it goes on a scale of 0 to 300 or something.
Yeah.
And anything around 200 is really good.
183 is the league average.
Yeah, so we aim for 200, and our number, I think, at quarter time, by memory, and I've only heard this on game day, was 229.
Wow. Oh, boy.
Or half time.
So how is it measured? It's tackling.
And this is a team measurement.
Team measurement. Yeah, there's points for individuals and there's points as a team. So it's measured basically by how much pressure is put on an individual at any given point. So if they're kick marking the ball around and uncontested marks, your number will be close to zero.
Okay, yeah.
But if the ball is, you know, in transition, there's a lot of turnovers, there's a lot of tackles, a lot of pressure, a lot of errant kicks, that sort of thing, then your pressure number goes through the roof.
How do your boffins watch the footy and actually... I reckon they make it up.
Well, the team of champion data don't make anything
How many people are watching going, hang on, that's a pressure point, pressure point, pressure point?
I don't know how they do it.
Hang on.
I don't know how they do it.
I reckon some bloke watches and goes, that's a pretty pressure-ish quarter. I'll give him 203.
It's not how it works, but it has come back for the Magpies. And I imagine, actually, the game was interesting on the weekend because it wasn't an overly attractive game, but you dominated pretty much midway, earlier than the second term, it was on your terms. And then you let them kick four late when the game was over. You let them kick four in the last quarter. What does Bucks say about that? Considering the game was in control and you got it on your terms, but you need to sort of let it slip late. What does he say about that leading into a finals campaign?
Yeah, I think, our leaders were probably more disappointed than what Bucks was. And we sort of spoke about that Monday morning first thing and addressed that as a leadership group. And then we decided on what way we wanted to review the game. And the conclusion we came to was to show edits of us doing it really well. So basically keeping Melbourne scoreless for almost two quarters and then and then White broke down in the last quarter and we're completely out of shape, guys out of role and our lack of pressure on the ball. So they scored against us by doing things we knew they were gonna do, try to get the ball through the corridor and we went away from what was working for the first three quarters and it's funny how it works. They scored against us.
So was it pretty obvious for you when you're looking at the reviews and people were like, totally weren't doing what we were doing for the first three quarters?
Yeah, it's so easy to see, especially with behind the goals vision. There's absolutely nowhere to hide, and it's a great learning tool. And it's self-explanatory because the guys know the game plan so well, and you kind of know when you're out there, when you're out of position, and it almost like a snowball effect. When someone's out of position, then drag someone else out, then someone else out, and then all of a sudden you're doing extra work, and you're so fatigued that it just compounds the issue.
And why does it happen? I mean, I'm coaching at the moment with the Melbourne Vixens, and sometimes, we come off and we think, you know what, we weren't doing what we'd agreed that we would do. And it's an interesting mentality because you know what it is. You've been doing it for three quarters. Is what shifts do you think in the mind of an athlete when you stop doing the things that you know you should be doing?
Yeah, well, I think it probably got to the 10 or 15 minute mark and we kind of put the cue in the rack a little bit. When you sort of go into self-preservation mode and think, we're a big game next week on the road and I don't want to hurt myself. Mm. Maybe that's something that might cross the mind of players.
Think you got the job done?
Yeah,
already?
that sort of mentality, which is not great, and that's why we addressed it first thing Monday.
That's how I started game, Scotty. The game next week, don't I hurt myself?
Already thinking about it.
Don't go too
keep out of trouble.
You talk about the review, though, the review process. You said before that you thought about, from a leadership perspective, how you wanted to review it. Yep. Do you take charge of that? Do you do the edits? How does that work?
So we meet with Maxie, Nick Maxwell, on a Monday morning, the five of us, plus an emerging leader. This week it was Braden Maynard, which is always quite interesting. So then we spend half an hour with him and we sort of give our thoughts on the game and just discuss what we thought as players being out there. Usually there's a lot of dialogue that goes on via text messages or when we do recovery and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Immediately after the game or on the Sunday following the game. So, we come to that meeting with a fair bit of knowledge and we're sort of all on the same page. Then we go and take that to Bucks and we have a chat with Bucks and he sort of gives his feedback and what the coaches thought and we sort of, combine what we felt out there and come up with the best way to review the game, keeping it as short and pointy as possible and making sure that we don't, try to hit 10 or 15 points. It's just three or four things and make sure that we take the learnings from that and implement it in training.
So do you guys ever run those sessions out the front, talking through this, boys, this is what we did rather than Bucks?
Probably more than half the time, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Bucks is always up there doing something. Like, he'll present something. Not always, but 85% of the time.
Yeah.
But it might only take him 5 minutes. The rest of the time, it's either done by someone from the leadership group or one of those emerging leaders, like a Braden Maynard.
Like a Braden Maynard, who's clearly a loose dude. What's
Braden bring to the
table? He just sees the game differently, and I love it. He's one of the players that's matured most that I've seen in my time at a footy club, and he plays like that now. Like, he's a real leader out on the footy field, and he's relied upon by his teammates. But if you said it to me 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when he first walked into the club, I would have laughed at you because he was just a hooligan.
But when you just say that he's a hooligan, I like that. When he looks at it differently, do you enjoy that as a leadership group?
Yeah, it's
because
great.
It's a different kind of aspect on things?
Yeah, I think that what I'm trying to refer to there is just like his passion. And he just sort of says it how it is rather than like...
There's no filter
and there's no... He doesn't try to make it sound like he's a coach. It's just like... This is what I saw. This is what I thought.
That
happened.
Bloke shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. So it's great to have players like that. And we've got a few of those guys in our both leadership group and emerging leaders group that bring a different style of learning to the team.
So after your meeting with Maxi, you go to Bucks. Bucks will say, because, you know, there's tactics, as the AFLW coach of the year will tell you.
Yes.
So Bucks will go, I'm going to spray him today. I've had enough. And you'll go, okay, we agree. Or you go, I think these blokes need a whack or cuddle. Do you know what I mean?
But
are you aware of which way he might approach it?
Yeah, but I've never heard it. He would never say that.
Yeah. I'd love if he said that.
It's more. Yeah. I've never heard those words come out of his mouth. No, it's more like... This is what worked. This is what didn't work. Now let's see the evidence of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's methodical. It's not like... No, there's no emotion in it when it gets to Monday.
Stuff getting chucked and...
chairs being thrown.
Bloody lights off. All that sort of stuff.
Time to find out the latest in the news in the world of football. Channel 7's number one man, Mark Stevens, is charged into the studio. Charged. He's got plenty to talk to us about this morning.
He's got a snow jacket on.
It's not exactly that cold.
No, it's not, actually.
Stevo, good morning.
Yeah, morning, guys. I'm just on the phone, Scotty, as we do.
Making calls.
Late calls.
Absolutely.
Research.
That's why you're the best in the business.
I love your interviewing there, guys, with Taylor Adams. Interesting character, isn't he, in footy?
Oh, he's great.
He's a ripper.
He's
honest.
Yeah, he just loves the football environment.
He does. He does. He's a very good club man. Loves the club environment, as you say. But
I think he'll be a coach.
He'll probably move into that realm.
Yeah,
I reckon he will.
Yeah, it'd be development.
Give a good spray, I reckon.
Development coach.
I reckon he'd
go start somewhere.
Yeah.
Interesting point. There was somebody talking about this the other day, that whether players who come out of the playing ranks and go into coaching should go straight to a line coach as opposed to a development coach, because development coaching is a very important part of clubland these days. You've got to be able to know how to coach to develop properly, rather than just be that rookie guy to come in, because that's where they
push it. Explain the difference to our listeners. So they spend more time with the younger players, kicking the ball to them.
Buying burgers for folks, keeping them happy.
Do you know what I mean?
That's what they do.
Yeah, it's more that one-on-one sort of craft stuff, that one-on-one time, that as opposed to the group session with the main training sessions and the line coaches. The development coaches seem to do more that one-on-one stuff or smaller group stuff to teach the craft of play. And that's a really important role. Because your mate, Brendan McCartney, who has been one of the great development coaches in football, has got this amazing reputation and resume of developing players. And that's such a good, important role, because you can draft all the talent you like, but if you can't develop it, it's actually they're no good to you.
And also the way you go about it with a young athlete who's developing and learning, what you're teaching them and talking to them session by session is very different to the ones at the top end who you're trying to take through a season.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a really important
role. So you would suggest, Daniel Sun, that they should do development before they do line?
Well,
it would be better for them. Is that where you're coming from?
No, I'm the other way. That perhaps
you
get them to assist a line coach to learn the craft of coaching.
I'm told they go straight to line. There's no assisting the line.
Well, they can help out. You can't just walk straight in unless you're pretty special.
A few do,
and some do. And there's always an outlier, Scotty,
like you,
on the graph.
Is there a bit of a stigma to being a development coach, though?
Because you talk to
some former coaches, and I won't name all names, but he's just a development coach.
Yeah, I think that's right, but I think that's such a backward way of looking at it.
You get a good one.
If that's your mindset as a coach, then I think you've got the whole thing wrong. That's my opinion.
Because
development is such a big part of it. You get all these kids in, you spend so much time investing, trying to find the right players for your team. If you can't develop them correctly,
McCartney taught Bartell Johnson. He taught all them how to play the proper way.
Yeah.
And they all swear by it.
Well, Richardson was the same, a fantastic development coach. It's a really important role. I reckon you're right, Steve. I reckon there is a stigma that goes with it. You're the other guy that does the development stuff. There's a whole lot more to it than that, I reckon.
Matty Boyd's doing a great job down at Collingwood, too.
He is.
With that, he's very hands-on. You turn up down at the VFL, he's there doing long hours, Boardy.
I like the way you get the Bulldogs
very
in again.
Passionate man.
Premiership player, former great.
But Jordan Dugowie's an interesting one at Collingwood. He won't play, I can confirm, he won't play until the finals.
Oh, really?
So, I don't think there was a major incident. This may have been some awareness last week. So, look, they're going to be very, very safe.
Yeah, but just Darcy Moore's next week.
Darcy Moore will play against Essendon. I think Jordan Dugowie just kept away, warehoused until the finals, which I think is a smart move, Scotty.
Yeah, yes and no. They need a bit of continuity in that side. Because then him and Stevenson coming in fresh.
Mm, yeah, a good point. Do you bring Stevenson in fresh?
Oh, you got to play him. Yeah, they're undermanned, and the forward line hasn't really worked without him.
Well, and according to our man Taylor, he's the fittest man in AFL, so he's going.
You have to, don't you?
Oh, I think they are.
Who?
Stevenson coming straight in. I think they've always sort of flagged that.
Yeah, yeah, that'll happen. Well, that's changed their whole dynamic not having him there.
Yeah,
totally.
Totally screwed them.
Ben Reid as well. We'd sort of given up on Ben Reid. He's having a crack at it, so to get back.
He's probably doing it for his next club, isn't he?
No, he's having a serious go at it. I think he's a little bit ahead of what
he won't be playing at Collingwood next year.
No, but he's a chance to maybe.
But someone would
be available this year squeeze back in, Scotty, in case of injuries.
Well, they've got injuries.
Yeah.
Well,
the other one's Tyson Goldsack, who must be thinking.
Message loud and clear to Tyson.
But all the soldiers have fallen over and he still can't get a game. So they've got Magdon in there now.
Poor, I mean, I feel for him. I mean, he clearly...
Well, you're part of your team there.
He is.
He is. I signed him up to a column.
Well, we like our VFL.
He signed up Devin Smith as well. We haven't seen him.
There's a bit of a setback there. We couldn't have forecast that.
There's a little bit of a curse down there.
Yeah, I would suggest you don't want to ever write for the
But what I'm surprised is, if your form's not good in the VFL, that's not always the real reason. As you know, good players sometimes don't get a kick in the VFL.
I know this for a fact.
So Tyson, it's like Buck's lost trust in what he could do, which is odd because last year he embraced him, you know, widely when he was the go-to man back from injury.
Different game, isn't it? Even Fogarty's not dominating at, say, at Adelaide in the Sandfall, hasn't done a lot.
Mm.
Comes in, looks a lot better. Delivery, and I know Goldie says this privately, it's all about running patterns and chains and where you go
to. It's much more predictable.
You
do all your hard work and then someone in the chain mucks it up and the delivery's messy then. It's a lot tougher down there to get a kick.
It's an interesting stance.
Yeah.
The no gold sack
no
at
gold
all.
Sack situation.
Why wouldn't you have a look at him over the last month?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Even just as a safety net.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah. So it doesn't look like it's going to happen for your man Tyson, Herald Sun's own. Tyson Goldsack.
Look forward to the column on his tough year because it's definitely a frustrating.
I think would be a column. I hate Bucks would be the next one.
I don't think so.
Well, he's not giving him a go.
He doesn't hate anyone, Goldie.
Well,
he
should.
Captain of the best.
Should be aggressive like Taylor Harris. Feisty.
Taylor Harris.
Oh, we were talking about
she's
boxing
fighting
before.
Tonight.
She fights with.
You'll be up there for 7 years. You'll be up there.
Yeah, she's amazing. That photo is the best thing that's ever happened to Taylor. A moment and a second in time from Michael Wilson. He has changed her life.
I think.
Is it true she told him that she was going to do it? Preempted it.
Really?
Don't tell me.
She has had conversations before.
Well, it was during a game, though.
Don't tell me that, Scotty.
No, I think there was a bit of...
I don't know if that's the case or not.
Do you think it was a bit pre-planned?
No, well, not she had to get the ball and mark it. No, something about I'm going to let one rip today or something.
Well,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, but
let one rip. Oh, a big bomb.
Yes, I'm going to kick the ball long.
I'm not talking about the way of life.
Yes,
Daniel. The wonder of life. Yeah. Wonder of life.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying now.
I'm deflated by that, though, because
it was
a moment, an impromptu. A setup.
It's
a long way from being concrete evidence, what we're hearing from Scotland.
Think you go with my intel.
Your intel?
Contrived.
She didn't mark the ball and then give him a wink on the sidelines and go, hey, now's your moment. No, that's not nuts.
You knew where the photographer was?
No.
Not so sure about that, Scotty. I'm not so sure about that.
You know how we talk about car parks in footy? And it actually happened yesterday in Adelaide. Theo Doropoulos, who was gun cricketer.
Former
he was.
Right of medalist, mate.
Big bash.
Right of medalist, mate. He's one of the greats.
Right of medalist. Yeah.
My word, he is.
Really? He's so, Warnies, mate.
He, he had the role yesterday of
oh no, it's a good
chasing
story.
Down Eddie Betts, who, of course, it's interesting with Eddie, isn't it? What's he going to do? And here's a little grab from the news last night with Eddie being chased down in the car park.
No, that's up to the management, and so as I said, I'm contracted here for next year.
So at this stage, we can expect to see you at West Lakes in 2020.
Yeah, bloody oath.
So do we take that to the bank half, do you think?
No, I don't think we take anything to the bank these days.
I think he said that it's in the hands of the manager. He was asked directly there about Gold Coast and whether he'd go there. I think that'd be the most likely, you'd think,
He's not coming back to Carlton. Can we put that to bed?
No. I don't think we can.
You honestly believe Carlton would draft a 31-2-year-old?
How old is Eddie? Is he 31-2?
He has to be.
31-2.
I love him, but he's showing signs of
decline. He looked good last week. Last quarter, he lit it up.
And if Carlton goes down that track, boy, oh boy, where are we? That's awesome.
I don't think that'd be part of Soss's mantra.
I don't think it's part of the build, the list build, at this stage, from my understanding.
They need a small forward, though. They're looking at Tipper and Waller down at... Oh, he's the same person.
I was thinking, hang on a second, aren't they the same guy?
Say that again. They're looking at Tipper and Waller.
Yeah, both
same
of them.
Person. I never know what to call him.
There are two of him, though. He plays well one week.
Well, that's right. When he kicks goals, he's Waller. When he's not playing, doesn't kick goals, he's Tipper.
They do need a small forward. So you just never know, half.
He wants a lot of cash, Waller and Tipper.
Well, weren't your mate the doggies in
there? Yeah, they were sniffing. Yeah.
I was sniffing for sixes.
The question is, again, I watched the game, said, Waller absolutely, he disappeared.
Oh, he's hopeless.
He disappeared.
When he's off.
He was absolutely non-existent, Waller. And, and that's what happens in the losses. He just vanishes off the stat sheet.
He's a remarkable stat, that he just disappears when they lose. Yeah. He just doesn't do anything.
Imagine coaching him going, Tipper or Waller, who's coming today? Which one?
Who's turning up?
I don't know.
And talking of Essendon as well, linked to that, Jake Stringer, no chance this week of playing. I don't think he's up at all.
It's a blow.
He said 50-50 yesterday, but I think they're just dragging things on. I think Adam White at home, probably on the sofa now, more chance of playing for Essendon this week.
Oh, wow.
The big question is whether...
he's nearly dead.
The big question is whether he can get up for the following week. They need to save him for that big game against Collingwood, round 23.
I tell you what, if they lose this week, they mightn't have to worry. It's just about to be all over. Well, obviously, it won't be, because they've got to beat Collingwood to be a chance still. But if they're leaving it up to Friday night footy against the Pies, bringing back injured blokes with hamstrings to win the game for them.
What did you
make? Look, he might be right for that game, but unlucky again, Essendon. Like... How flat are they? Sanderland says, I might have my farewell game. Just was a dead rubber till they did that. So Freo are going to be...
They'll
be up for the big boy.
What did you make of the steak dinner between the CEO and Worsfold on Monday?
Squire's Loft.
I like Squire's Loft. Ribs are outstanding. Yeah. Go the ribs, not the steak.
It's a cliched sort of a place to go.
Not for a CEO and a coach.
But it's a chain. It's sort of Whitey type back. It's a franchise.
No, no.
It's not Hog's Breath.
It's high quality. No, I would defend. I'll defend Squire's Loft.
It's a safe venue.
No, I'm with you. 100% with you.
It's a safe venue, isn't it? The menu's safe. And, yeah.
Well, it's meat. It's a speciality. They don't hide it.
But I think that's a concern. You think it's a concern for Woosha, wouldn't you?
Well, I don't know. What would the conversation have been?
It would have been a concern if Xavier Campbell's ordering fresh meat.
But interesting location to go to Squire's Loft in Essendon to have a... Like,
You've got to
you
got to have a meal somewhere.
Get a private room somewhere in Chinatown or something.
Dim sum in a private booth.
Oh, wow. It's a central vow.
But people are going to see him. So, look, I think he's under the pump, Woosha.
I think he's in all sorts.
Do you think...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think they'll lose the last two games and he'll be gone by the Monday of the... afterwards.
Yeah, we always thought that if they didn't make finals from where they were, Scotty, that he'd be in trouble.
Yep.
He may have already been gone had they not got out of jail.
It was mid-year.
GWS,
no,
they probably shouldn't have.
Well, when they went on that run.
Waller kicked a goal the last minute.
Yeah.
What has changed so significantly, particularly in the last couple of weeks? They've just been wiped off the park.
Injuries has been harsh to them, to be fair. The effort in the last 2 weeks is just...
Well, what about the Gold Coast result? You look at that and think they nearly lost.
They should have lost that. Yeah, you're right.
They nearly lost to the Gold Coast, so that was...
They're a bit of a mess, and it just smells of a club, I think, needs someone different. The players look like they're playing like that.
Yes.
Need some passion, huh?
Melbourne and Sydney is going to be a ripper. An absolute ripper.
No, I think it'll be
Jared McVeigh agrees with me. He's on the line, wants to talk to you all about it. Hello, Jared.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
No, pleasure to have you on. Now, it's coming towards the end for you, not just the season, but for your time in red and white as a player, 324 games in. Are you conscious of that at the moment with the last couple of games?
Yes. I mean, you know, you're walking around the club and, you know, you've only got a couple of weeks left. It's a weird feeling, but just trying to stick to things as usual and train hard. And then, you know, I'm trying to get back to play the last game. So just kind of focusing all my energy on that.
What's the status on the likelihood of that?
I'm back running, so I've got to train next week and train pretty well to play. So it'll be touch and go, I think, at this stage. So fingers crossed I can get through.
I'm sure you'll get up. You think Horse will give you a few little favours? You'll only have to be 95%. I think you deserve a farewell.
Yeah, look, it's not so much about a farewell. I just want to, you know, I love footy and just want to play again. And, you know, I'd love to be out there this week and have played all year. But, you know, the injuries have kind of caught up with me, which is fine. But, I just try and do whatever I can and you know, make sure I'm ready to go for next week. And you know, it'd be good if Bud get back for his 300 too. It'd be a great day.
And what's the role next year already locked away, Jared?
Yeah, look, I'm signed up for 4 years, which, you know, really good security, and my family's really happy here with the kids at school. And, we're going to run through that, you know, probably over the next month or two. But, I'm really excited with our young group and you know, see where we can take them.
I was going to say, Sydney's had a disappointing year in one sense, but the young kids that you've found and moving forward, it is a pretty exciting place.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've got a lot of games into the kids, which is, you know, fantastic. And, you know, initially when you get to a footy club, all you want to do is just apply, you know, games of footy. You know, you're kind of focused on yourself. But once we've got those games with those kids and they start moving, you know, and changing their mindset a bit, I guess, into, you know, we're here now, we're, you know, we're really involved, you know, that's really exciting for us.
You've had some incredible experiences with the Swans over the years. Have you had a bit of a chance to reflect on some of those times?
I have. You know, generally, you know, the away games, you know, because we travel so much, just those away wins, I think, are the best. Finals and grand finals are always obviously the pinnacle of what we're about. You know, some of the things I'll miss the most is actually just driving to the game and seeing all the fans wearing the scarves and, you know, driving to the MCG and you can see the trams are full and, you know they're coming to watch you. And that's probably one of the things I'll miss the most.
Yeah, and you've, along with those amazing experiences, there's been tough times on the field as well. A couple of losses in those big grand finals. I'm always interested in what you take out of those things and how that helps to shape you, because wins do one thing for you, but when the times are challenging, it can sometimes, you know, be the biggest growth period.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the true test of your character and your leadership is in those hard times. And, you know, to not play well in the 14 and 16 grand finals really hurt. Played well in 12 and in 2006, I just missed out again. But, yeah, I think it's a true test of your leadership and the way you carry yourself around the group and how you respond. And, you know, we definitely learn a lot from that. And unfortunately, we don't get another chance this year to try and rectify it. But, those are... You know, not so much, you know, they're disappointing, but you can definitely learn a lot. And, you know, they do hurt and you lose a bit of sleep over it. But that's what footy's all about.
You've ridden the highs and lows on the field through an amazing career, it must be said. Jared, you've also had some challenges off the field that have been well publicised. Does that perspective and balance and understanding of what's important, does that make you a better teammate as well as a better human?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's obviously very challenging, the worst thing that, you know, we could have went through. But it definitely, I guess, it made me more resilient as a person, as a player. I mean, you know, when you're training and you have thoughts of, geez, can I go hard enough here at training? It really brought that into perspective for me, and I knew that nothing would be able to shake me, you know, resilience-wise, and that really, you know, helped me throughout my career, I think. And then just being, yeah, just around my family and stuff like that, I feel like, you know, I definitely did change.
Second test of the Ashes starts tonight at Lord's, our time tomorrow, if you're living over there, where Brad Haddon is a part of the Australian coaching camp, who joins us on the Breakfast Club. Welcome, Brad.
Thanks for having me. How's it going?
We're going really well, thanks, buddy. I'm sure you're going pretty well too. One up after one. Things are okay?
Yeah, it was. And I think it's obviously it's always exciting, that first test of an Ashes campaign. I just think the style that we played and where we came from in the game brings a lot of confidence and excitement to the camp. So, but that can only be matched by one thing, and that's turning up the Lords and seeing the excitement on the guys' faces who haven't been at Lords before. So that's also exciting too.
It's interesting you bring that up because Edgbaston hasn't been a happy hunting ground for the Australian cricket team in Ashes campaigns of past, but Lords has been. But you've got a lot of players that haven't been there. So how does that affect the confidence, knowing that success has come at Lords in recent years, but a lot of guys haven't been a part of it?
Yeah, we had a good chat. Our senior players today had a good chat about the slope at Lords and just explained to some of the guys that haven't been there how different the ground can be. So that was exciting for everyone as well. It's such a great ground to be a part of, not just walking on the ground, but even enjoying the famous Lord's lunches. Everyone's been tapping into those. So it's exciting. It's not hard to get the guys up training-wise this week. They've all been pretty excited about getting the opportunity to train and get ready for a game at Lord's. So now we just hope this weather holds off tomorrow and we can have a crack.
I know that you've got a game to focus on, but we were talking to Big John Hastings yesterday. He was talking about the famous Lords lunches, and he said there was always a few players that would sneak in 10 minutes before lunch just to get there ready first. Who's the one or two that sneaked into the lunchroom quickest at the moment?
John Hastings was one. no, it's normally it varies. You have, if you've had a long batting in, the bowlers, They spend a lot of time up there. Then they normally enjoy the dessert as well. The batters aren't so keen to get up there as the bowlers. So, but the bowlers definitely give it a good crack over this next 5 days. They will.
Brad, there's been a lot of talk about the pitch. How's it looking?
Yeah, it looked pretty good. I was talking to Justin Langer today, and he said it looked a lot drier than what we expected here. So that's why we're just delaying the last spot in our bowling attack. You talk a lot about the wickets over here, but you normally look up and see what overhead conditions are, whether it'll swing or whether it's a nice sunny day and it'll be a nice flat wicket. But, yeah, it looks a really good wicket. So, game on.
Well, talk to us about those quicks. We've got Pattinson out. That's obviously just resting things. There's a big campaign ahead. What does it look like that 11th player will be?
Yes, it's coming down. It'll come down to two. It'll come down to Stark and Hazelwood for that last spot. So we'll delay that a bit till we see what overhead conditions we get tomorrow. We'll make the final call on that. But yeah, James is he's going to have this one off. He's available for selection, but after what he's been through with his body to get back to the form he is now and back playing for Australia, we thought the best management with him was to make sure he's fresh for the third test.
Well, and I know we probably won't find out right until the toss. We heard that from Justin Langer. Is that part of the mind games, or is that literally just waiting till the last minute to make sure you make the best decision?
Yeah, no, it's not part of the mind games at all. It's just we're not sure on weather conditions tomorrow morning. And where we're blessed at the moment is we've got a really good group of quick bowlers. So, yeah, we've got five that can pick on. So, yeah, it's just more of a gut feel. We'd like to just have a look on that last spot to see what the weather does tomorrow to see who we go with. And personally, I don't think we can go wrong either way.
If you're listening to Nat Medhurst from the Collingwood netball team, you will have a great day. She joins us on The Breakfast Club. Hello, Nat.
Good morning. I hope I don't let people down now.
No, I reckon you'll be right. I reckon you'll be right because you're up and about because you've travelled for the first time this season with the Magpies and got a win on the road. What's been the big barrier for the road trips this year?
Who knows? We travelled to the furthest place possible too,
yeah,
to Perth. And
and got the win. Yeah, we've been a bit of a shambles on the road. So, as you said, it was nice to get a win. And more importantly, I think we're 1 point out of the four. So it would have been nice to have snuck in. But, yeah, got the win. And with two games left, a little bit closer now to hopefully featuring in finals.
And you had a big third quarter against the Fever. 57-63 was the scoreline Monday night in Super Netball. And you had the third quarter. It was the only quarter you won. Was the third quarter. It was an 8-goal margin in that quarter. It must have been an interesting game to play if you're sort of breaking out in one quarter and they've got you covered in the other three.
Yeah, well, sometimes that's all you need, guys. You just need that one quarter.
True. Well, that's true.
You need to pull your finger out and do enough. But it was a really great quarter for us. And, I think Fever obviously have such a big scoring power with Janelle back there. And so they beat us in round five, I think it was, by 2 goals. So we knew we were going to be with a big game up on our hands. So, as you said, one decent quarter, nearly won the last quarter as well. And then must get an extra bonus point, but ultimately got the win, which is what we needed.
Now, what about this Monday night netball?
Oh, God.
Take me through this.
I don't know. Can you explain it?
Was there anyone there watching you?
There was. I must admit, Perth always get a pretty awesome crowd, so there were quite a few people there. But we were initially scheduled for the Saturday night, but they got bumped out of RAC Arena because of Fleetwood Mac. That is actually why we got bumped. So we got bumped to the Monday night. I do not like it. So we got back late yesterday. I think got home about 5:30. I walked in the door and literally just rocked up to training this morning. So yeah, short turnaround.
Wow, there you go. And obviously that'll be a challenge. But tell us about what it was like heading back to Perth. Obviously you were playing for the Fever last year, so no doubt the big crowd was there to kind of, well, did they welcome you back?
They were nice, Chaz.
Oh, that's
nice. No, I've had a lot of support from all the crowd. I think, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about it and, the media love drumming it up as they do, but I was prepared, I think, to be overwhelmed, which for me actually helped, I think, just prepare and do everything and not feel too nervous about it. I think actually admitting that is a good thing. I know in the past you sort of pretend that you're fine and nerves don't exist and you turn into an absolute shambles. So, it was nice. It was really good to be there. To be honest, Perth actually put on some decent weather, so it was nice to see sunshine. I think I stepped outside for 2 minutes and got burnt. I haven't seen it in 8 months. But, it was really good to get back there and see a lot of familiar faces, and the crowd were really welcoming, which was nice.
And it is an interesting time for you as an individual in the team and for the team. You know, finals are literally on the line in the next couple of weeks. You started on the bench again, which perhaps, well, for some, a bit of a surprise. How do you manage that different role?
It is different, to be honest. I actually didn't find out. I actually thought I was starting, and it wasn't until I walked into the change room literally just before we had our team meeting that I found out I was on the bench. So I wasn't expecting that. But, yeah, you do your role, and you obviously, in some ways, it also fires me up as well to, prove a point when you get back out there. But I thought Gabby played really well. She shoots beautifully, and I think it makes the defenders change as well. I think they probably don't pay her enough attention as respect as what they maybe should otherwise. So, I'm old enough and I guess ugly enough to be able to deal with it. And I know I'm still capable of doing my job when I get out there, which is then the main thing.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.